Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie at JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hi, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my living room, and I'm talking to longtime ranger of the Dork Forest, Justin Moharib.
There you go.
Moharib. Yes. I literally looked how it was spelled and then sounded it out. So welcome to the program at The Bitter Guy on Twitter. And I love your background. On
Thank you.
I love this. It feels Canadian. It feels rustic.
It is actually very Canadian. It's Doc's Workshop from Fraggle Rock. I don't know if you ever watched that. It is.
I don't get that. I wish to God that I got that. I can't express to you how much I wish I got that.
Well, you just need to get a Fraggle Rock dork on here sometime.
Oh, and I think attainable goal. Yes. I don't think that's not gonna happen. I'm excited by the dorkdom that you've chosen because we're gonna talk the thing that I enjoy.
Yes.
Which is Marvel Studios. Oh, are you wearing a Marvel?
No, I'm actually wearing a Star Wars Doctor Who mashup. So that's neither of those things. Well, technically, both of those are Marvel. So there you go.
Wait, did Disney buy Doctor Who?
Not yet.
Oh, well.
That would involve them purchasing the BBC. And I think there may be laws in place to prevent that sort of thing.
Let's knock on wood. They don't need to have everything.
No,
We spread the wealth a little bit here, people.
They're far too powerful.
They're super, super powerful. And there's only seems to be one decent Disney person. That one woman who's at Disney. She seems to be sane as she sits on her Scrooge McDuck pile of money, which actually works as a reference.
Literal.
And so do you want to start with, let's do this, Justin Moharib. Let us discuss how long you, now you're more Marvel than DC, I take it.
Yes.
Okay.
It's just, that's how it
like
worked
DC.
Out. Yeah. I mean,
that's
DC, DC's great. DC had like Superman and the Batman and all those guys. And that was fun. And, but you know, Marvel just had
you more. Sucked you in, sucked you in. Me too. Cause I also enjoy DC, but Marvel quite honestly just has more content and they have yet to, they haven't really failed. There's been some things done better than other things, but there's a gajillion movies.
Yeah.
And a pile of TV shows. The TV shows that were done prior are not as good, even though I'm a huge fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yes. I adore that show.
From the beginning. Where do you want to start?
There is, well,
we only have an hour.
We've only got an hour.
I could talk for an hour.
We could go for a bit, to be honest. It is, I mean, I started it began when I was a child. My mother came home one day and brought me two comic books to read, one of which was part two of a Justice League Justice Society crossover, where they were investigating the murder of Mr. Terrific. And this is a character who had never appeared on Super Friends, so I had no idea who he was. I just thought, well, if Batman's upset, I'm upset. That's what we're going to go for this. So, you know, I read that and it was fun. And the other one was literally a issue of Marvel Fun and Games, which was crosswords and word searches and all sorts of silly stuff.
Oh.
But, you know, so that was how I got started reading comics. And then, you know, I would go to my local corner shop because this was small town Ontario in the late 70s. We did not have comic stores.
No. But they did have some comics at like the convenience store.
Oh yeah, they had the big rack. Hey Kids comics.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
And you pull them down, and you know, if you have some place, they're lucky enough to pull them aside for you because they know they'll get your money. And yeah, and you know, I made friends who read comics, and it was all big. And then one day they released the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, which I think, if I had absorbed any other document as well as the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, I would be like a priest or a lawyer or a scientist right now. Instead, I'm a guy who owns a lot of colorful t-shirts. So that was a life choice and I made it. But
yes, that's hilarious. I was just thinking about where I got comics when I was about 11 or 12 when I first, and it was the hobby shop. It was like a place that had like models and glue that they kept locked up because I lived in small town Wisconsin in the 70s, and people wanted to sniff glue. But there was comic books, and then there was also really pulpy novels. Like I read a lot of African Merc novels. They were thrillers about mercenaries who fought in like Rwanda.
Oh yeah.
Or with the Mbele. It was completely insane. I was like, what is this?
Is that like Eagle Forest or something like that?
That sounds familiar. I didn't keep any of them, but Eagle Force sounds like exactly what they would have called themselves. It's just written by some guy who probably owns like an AR-15 right now. And you're like, come on, man. Anyway.
I belong to a Facebook group called Men's Adventure Novels of the 1980s. And these guys are very enthusiastic about these things. And these guys are also guys who are in their middle ages and enjoyed reading adventure novels. So you can see what the general vector, sure. And that's like, we don't always see eye to eye on things.
Well, can I recommend a series that is out of print that they probably all have disposable incomes that they had in my high school, in my junior high, that I'm very sad that when those books kind of fell apart, they just threw them out instead of fixing them.
Yeah.
Because they're out of print. They were called boys' books, and they were written in the early 1900s. And some of the series, there's one series, a very classic Civil War series, which I'm sure just whitewashes everything in the U.S. Civil War. But the guy's name is Joseph A. Altshuler. And Joseph A. Altshuler wrote about the French and Indian War. He wrote about the Civil War. He wrote about World War I. And he wrote about, essentially he's like the poor man's J. Fenimore Cooper.
Uh-huh.
Right? There was a lot of, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Like, I wonder about Joseph Altshuler sometimes. Like, I wonder, like, if he was one of these kind of, because he was from Kentucky, and he wrote 8 books about the Civil War. There were 2 cousins fought on opposite sides.
Of course.
So there's 8 books and 4 in each. And so I do wonder about sort of his sociopolitical agenda, which I don't know. But then, but I also don't think that your men's group might care, because there was a lot of good action.
Good. They would definitely dig into that.
Yeah. I am eaten into this.
Yes.
So you're so, okay.
So go for it. So yeah, I got, you know, I got into it. They released Ohotmu, which yeah, that's the abbreviation we use, Ohotmu. You know, there's the standard Ohotmu and there's the deluxe Ohotmu, and you know,
what is Ohotmu?
Official Marvel handbook universe. Of the Marvel universe.
Jesus Christos. Okay, fair enough.
And, you know, it was like basically a page or two on every character, and you would learn about people you'd never seen. It's like everything I know about the Eternals upcoming this fall from Marvel Disney is from these books, because I never, it was like, you know, Jack Kirby was writing these things in the 70s. I was wearing diapers, you know. So.
Okay, right, right. So, you interesting. Know. Yeah. So I wonder if Andy has Ohotmu, because he is the one that I go to these movies with, and I look at him sometimes and it's like, who's that? And because it's like it's being married to a long box. Who doesn't want to be? That's a dick joke.
It is.
Who doesn't want to be? Who doesn't want that sort of information? It the first time, like I remember. Like Iron Man came out, and I hadn't seen the Hulk. Right, the Hulk came out officially before Iron Man. In sort of current MCU,
the Incredible Hulk came out a few months after Iron Man.
Oh, they came out almost simultaneously in my mind, because it feels like Iron Man came out way after it, just because it was much more impression. I mean, it made a bigger impression on me, I think.
Well, so did it made a big impression on everybody compared to the Incredible Hulk. It's like, that is a film that, you know, I don't think Disney likes to pretend it even exists anymore.
Yet I've rewatched it and I like it.
Oh, I enjoy it. I consider it one of the MCU canon, now that I've used that word and pretty much established where this is going.
It's It's yeah. So of the 23 movies, which are your favorites?
Oh, well, that's like choosing your favorite kid now, isn't it?
Well, the thing is you could say, because I do, I say I love them all. But so like for kids, like I would say Ant-Man's.
Yeah. I would say my favorites are Guardians 2.
Guardians 2.
Nice. Just because it's just
Ego,
a great,
the living planet.
I do love how like they actually just throw in that shot of the face on the planet for like a second in the back half of the movie.
That's okay. That's great. Yeah.
Ego, Thor Ragnarok was also incredible. I loved how as they got to phase three, they started giving the creators more freedom and more, because I like seeing what Watiti and, you know, Iron Man 3, I am one of the few people who will stand up for that movie, but it is a pure Shane Black film. It's set as Christmas. It's about family. I love his stuff, and I love that movie.
Right. Him and that little kid have the greatest chemistry. That is, it's about PTSD.
Oh,
that's what, I mean, that's what I really like about, like, for me, what I like about the MCU movies is that they, and the TV shows, current TV shows, you know, I saw Daredevil. It was intense. It made me want to write a Night Nurse comic book.
There you go.
But the MCU universe, it deals with like real issues, you know? Yeah. Like if we skip ahead to WandaVision.
Oh,
it's entirely about grief, right?
Oh yeah. She, oh my God, that scene where she is like that flashback. I think it was in the last episode where they show that she, you know, she drove to the sword office, and then she drove to the house Vision bought her to grow older in. That was a heartbreaker. That was like, oh.
That was, it was out. It was amazing, which is interesting, because where did Vision get the money? Because clearly Falcon can't get a loan in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
I will point out that Vision was still working for Tony Stark all through that. Falcon was a fugitive from the law. You know, everyone on Team Cap, they were like hiding, you know, they were underground.
Right. Occasionally... So they lost their paychecks.
Yeah.
Okay.
All Vision has to do is like cut off one of his vibranium fingernails. Bing. He can put a down payment. Just pay for the halves of that.
Right. And it was a small town in New Jersey, so it wasn't exactly Malibu. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was sort of Back to the Future, the first movie.
Although it wasn't the second movie, because that was after Griff took over.
It was, well, that I just was, we're just going to bounce all over the place. It's pop culture, you guys. Yeah, the second movie, my brother Phil just told me that he loves the Back to the Future series. And he said the Back to the Future second movie is just an ad for the third movie. It's just an hour and a half ad for the third movie.
You like cowboys? Because we're going for cowboys next.
Yeah. And okay, so Guardians 2.
Yes. Just, you know, it was great.
Ragnarok.
Ragnarok was amazing.
What'd you love about Ragnarok? Because it was hella... And it was the buddy movie, right? And Loki?
It was a buddy movie. It was a family movie. It was about dealing with the consequences of your family's history.
Okay. You know, Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. You got lots of, you had a little bit of Sir Hopkins, but, he definitely made an impact.
Was it?
Sir Anthony Hopkins. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, when he shows up and he's like, I love you boys both. Oh, I'm going to die now.
But you guys gotta live your own lives. You can't hang out with all your siblings all the time, and but it does have that sort of history to it. Because I love them all, but those two are not my two of my favorites, so this is interesting to me.
Everyone takes something different away from something. That's one of the great things about any type of popular culture. It's like, and you can say, yeah, this is my thing.
Right. And so, because if you think about it, Guardians is also about family as well.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, though the first one was about creating a family, and the second one was literally about finding the history of your family. And so that is fascinating. And,
as someone who had, you know, maybe not the best relationship with her dad growing up, you know, it's like seeing that. It's like, hey, yeah, we're going to hang out, play ball. Oh, by the way, you know.
Yeah, you're never alone. You're absolutely never alone. So what was the it's always curious to me that, let's see, because when you watch the movies, it's all canon. It's all the long boxes. They go so far into the boxes that sometimes, you know, what I love about comic books is that they get to create their own story within it. They get to create, you know, like Bendis will just create the Sentry. And you're like, that guy doesn't exist. What's happening? What did you, and you retconned him into somebody's life? What happened?
Well, you always need your own Superman.
Right. But I think there was a Superman, wasn't there? Who was...
There were several. They had the Squadron Supreme's big dude. I can't remember. And I've forgotten his name now.
Oh, that's right.
Hyperion.
Yeah. Hyperion. That's right. Hyperion was more the Superman. And he could have just written Hyperion stories, but he wanted to create the Sentry. And the Sentry is such a mess. And the only reason I know about the Sentry is because he's in my video game. He's in my Marvel Puzzle Quest. And every time I get a cover of him, which is a level up, I'm like, who cares? And because he not only has an amazing power, he's always hitting himself. Like whenever he uses his power, he always destroys himself as well.
Okay. That's a bit self-destructive.
Well, it feels on the nose too, because that's the character, right? So, because there's so many different places that these are now, you know, I mean, there's the series, I don't even know where to lead you. Just start talking.
Let me play. All right. So I want to take you back to the early aughts. It was a kinder, gentler time. I know it may not have been the best. Stuff kind of went sideways one November night in 2000, but we're not going to go there. So they had released the Ultimate Universe. So they did the Ultimate Spider-Man that Bendis was writing, where he retold some of the stories from the classic Lee Ditko years.
Right.
And then they released a series called The Ultimates, which is basically the Avengers for this setting.
Okay.
And in that book, they use Sam Jackson as the face of Nick Fury. And everyone was like, well, that's a very interesting choice. I wonder how they did that. And one person, some nerd on the internet, which is unfortunately 90% of the sources I have for anything I hear, which means I don't think we should trust any of it. So consider this a story told around a fireplace.
Okay.
So a nerd on the internet said that, well, yeah, Sam Jackson agreed to be Nick Fury in The Ultimates if he could play him in a movie at some time. And I'm like, that's a fascinating suggestion, nerd on the internet. I'm going to accept that as gospel. I don't know if it was actually gospel.
Okay, but that's what you heard when The Ultimates came out with that.
Yeah, so they did that story. And then, you know, The Ultimates was very much its own book. I don't know if you got to read it or not, but
I don't think I did. Was that in the before they merged the two universes together?
Oh, well before. Yeah, they did. They did that after.
I never read I think the only when they started merging it, it was the Spider-Verse. That was the only one. That was my introduction to the Ultimates.
I don't think you missed a whole hell of a lot, to be honest.
There was too much. So
I can't remember. I think it was Millar or Ennis or one of those guys who hates comic books and the people who read them who wrote it. Because at one point they have Captain America fighting a Skrull. And the Skrull says, are you going to surrender now? And he says, do you think the letter on my head stands for France? And I'm like, wow, I have no idea what you're doing with that dude. But that's...
Wow. And the weird thing is, and I have said this before, before I read, I think it was Brubaker's Captain America.
Yeah.
I always thought that Captain America was a tool.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I don't want any part of... Why is he in this... weird like flag outfit, and is he a piece of work?
He's quit being Captain America several times because of like in the 70s he's like, I don't dig this Nixon thing, I'm gonna be Nomad, the man without a country.
And he had
the new outfit with his chest exposed so you can tell Steve Rogers either shaves or the super serum makes you drop. I don't know, I'm not gonna judge.
Right. He might not be hairy, he might be non-hairy.
That's how blonde guys roll sometimes. And then in the 80s, the government said, hey, Cap, we want you to work more closely with us. And he's like, no, I quit. And he became the captain. John Walker took over as Captain America. And that led on to the wonderful events of Falcon and Winter Soldier.
And U.S. Agent.
And U.S. Agent, yeah.
Yes. And Kurt Russell's son.
Yes.
So.
A delightful performer who I very much enjoyed in his little A&E show about a surfer in magical realism.
Oh, right. What was the name of that one?
Lodge 49.
Okay.
And it's, all right. If you ever get the chance, know that it ends on a cliffhanger. So,
okay. Yes. Fair enough.
But yeah, so, you know, they got Sam Jackson, and I most recently read that they did that without his permission. And he said, this is very uncool. What are you doing? And they're like, oh, we realize now that this is wrong. We're sorry. And he said, I'm a comic fan. It's okay. Pay me money and we'll talk about other stuff in the future.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could go either way, but I'm just glad Sam Jackson apparently has, I don't know how many contract films he's contracted for, but he does whatever he wants.
Right. They made peace with it. And he is an amazing Nick Fury. So
he does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward to the first Iron Man movie.
Right.
Now, 2008 or 9, I can't remember.
Okay, sure.
I do remember it was before I got an iPhone, and this is significant because it indicates that I am not as big an asshole as this anecdote I'm about to tell makes me sound. So we see Iron Man, and I think we go on the Tuesday after it's come out, because like, let's go see it. Sure. We'll get tickets for Tuesday. So my wife and our friend Lori and me, we go see it, and everyone has been saying, oh, you seen Iron Man yet? No, not yet. Well, make sure you stay till after the credits. And I'm like, okay, I'm sure there'll be something very interesting after the credits. And, you know, we're watching it, very much enjoying ourselves. He's flying, pew, pew, pew. You know, the bad guys speak Arabic, which, hey, not, it's the aughts. This thing is unfortunately common. And a friend of mine who's a linguist actually pointed out that the way they speak Arabic is very interesting because I can't remember the name of the big furry face guy, but when he introduced himself to Tony Stark, he's being very polite and formal. And when he's talking to the other guys, he speaks a much more street version. And then they use another more other formal version when they're delivering the message to Stain. So that's all very, you know, at least that's, they showed some interest in
accuracy. Yeah. They, which they Which is more respectful than any number of the bad guys are just going to be Russian, or the bad guys are just going to be Arabic or Middle Eastern, some vague Middle Eastern thing.
True Lies.
Or some vague Asian thing where you're like, that guy's Korean. Yeah. He's supposed to be Chinese. What's happened? And so, all right.
No, yeah, it's Orientalism, folks.
yeah, exactly. It's out of their minds. So at least they tried.
They made some effort, you know. It's, and once again, evil Arabs, but yeah. But you get into that film, and I don't know the exact time code, but you get Clark Gregg walk in, and he's Agent Coulson from Supreme Headquarters, International Espionage, whatever the SHIELD logo they're using. And literally my jaw dropped when he said that, because like, this guy is from SHIELD. He is from SHIELD, and they just said that out loud.
Yeah, they did.
And I took my phone out of my pocket and I texted Cindy and my wife, Cindy, and our friend, Lori. And I said, the post-credit scene.
With your Nokia?
With my Nokia. Yeah, with my black Nokia, which you can type on in the dark because, you know, ABC.
Right. Well, hopefully you had predictive. Go ahead.
Yes. And I said, the post-credit scene will be Sam Jackson as Nick Fury. And this was me speculating based on nothing except that guy on the internet saying Sam Jackson wanted to play Nick Fury and Clark Gregg playing Phil Coulson over in the air. So, you know, imagine my surprise. That turned out to be right. I called it. I was 100% correct. Why can't I do that on lottery numbers? You know?
Well, except for that. Right. I mean, I literally will sit through some of these movies and Andy will go, he'll just lean over and say, okay, that's interesting. Remember to ask me about that. And so they're all Easter eggs. They're all, you know, it's like in Ragnarok, I think there was a bust of Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
And on the world that Jeff Goldblum ruled.
Yes, Cigar.
Yeah. So.
And so, you
okay,
know.
Okay, so you called it.
I texted that very excited. And then, you know, he shows up at the end and the room goes wild. You know, 2 months later, the Hulk comes out and they have at the, you know, the post-credit scene where Tony Stark talks to General Ross, Thunderbolt Ross, and tells him, you know, it's like he's putting together a team. And then we're like, oh my God, they're actually doing this. And they start rolling the stuff out. And they were very optimistic at that initial point. They're like, oh yeah, we're going to do a Thor movie and a Captain America movie. And then we're going to do an Avengers movie and blah, 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 blah. And at some point they sat down and realized that this would involve actually murdering Robert Downey Jr. So they said, we're going to pace these out a little bit better, stretch out the timeline a little bit.
Right.
And, you know, then they had, you know, the big Comic Con panel.
Did you go to Comic-Con? Oh,
I haven't been
in those years.
No, I haven't been to Comic-Con since like 99.
Oh, and, fair enough. Yeah. I think I went in 2004. And that was the first time, and then the last time would have been 2006 or 2008 because too many people. It's even pre-pandemic. I can't I don't like to be jostled.
Yeah.
I'm anti-jostling. So it went Iron Man and then First Avenger.
First Avenger was no, they had Thor in between. They
right,
had
it was
Iron
Thor,
Man.
But right, Iron Man, Thor, and then First Avenger, right?
Yeah.
So then they have half. They have essentially most of the team right there. Yeah. Oh, except for that Black Widow and Hawkeye never got their own movies.
They never got their own. Black Widow got introduced in Iron Man 2, which I am midway through rewatching because nowadays I cannot just watch a whole damn movie. I have to like watch 10 minutes at a time, then go off and do something else.
We were during the heart of the pandemic, we were doing a rewatch and we stopped at Homecoming. That's how far we got. We got
that's
to,
pretty
that's pretty, pretty deep. So we haven't watched Homecoming yet, but Homecoming is one of my favorites just because they finally took the Vulture, which is a lame C supervillain in the books, and made him epic. Michael Keaton.
Oh, he did.
There was a reason. It made all kinds of sense. It was just awesome.
He was his girlfriend's dad.
yes. And so it made sense from, you know, at the end of this episode, of course, is full of entire spoilers, but these movies are 10 years old, if not 20. So but when he knows who Spider-Man is, when he goes to jail. But because Spider-Man saved his life, he doesn't tell the bad guys who he is. Because he's very much, I guess, tit for tat kind of guy. He's a quid pro quo kind of supervillain.
Yeah.
And
I did like that was, I think that was the Scorpion, the guy he was talking to.
That he was talking to? I think it was. I think it was. It wasn't the Lizard, was it?
No.
It was the Scorpion. Okay.
They had the Lizard in the Amazing Spider-Man films, and that didn't. That didn't pan out. Stuff got weird there.
The casting is amazing.
Oh yeah.
The woman who's in charge of casting, for some reason, is a genius at her job. She is really, really. I mean, the fact that Chris Evans played the Human Torch in the unlamented Fantastic Four movies, which are, and the thing is I'm predisposed to like this stuff, right? As I'm sure you are. The Fantastic Four was terrible.
It wasn't great. None of them have been great so far.
There was trouble. There was all kinds of trouble where I was like, no, what are you doing? But I have read some great Invisible Woman. I think it was either Slott or Fraction.
Oh, yeah.
It might have been Clarkson? No, Kelly Clarkson is a musician.
anyone can write comics these days.
I want to write comics.
There you go.
But yeah, but what? Who wrote the Invisible Woman?
Kelly Sue DeConnick?
I don't think it was Kelly Sue DeConnick. She wrote Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
was it a solo Sue Storm book or was it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so she also, there's two Kellys who are writing comic books, and I have blessedly gotten to meet there's Kelly Sue DeConnick, and there is
not Joe Kelly.
It is a Joe Kelly. It's
Kelly Thompson.
I think it's Kelly Thompson. Yeah, because she's also writing. She's writing a bunch of stuff right now, and it's pretty great. And but there's a great Sue Storm as a spy.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yes, and that's a great arc that is, I think, ongoing right now.
Cool.
And we're reading that, and that's super fun. But the casting, like for Chris Evans as Captain America, was so great. And the interviews with him, how that role actually changed him as a person.
Yeah.
Was kind of cool. You read any of that?
I follow him on Twitter, where he just seems to be just a great guy all the time. And I'm sure that must be exhausting because even I get frustrated and I don't have to deal with fans who have no comprehension of the barrier between character and performer
And his commitment, and his commitment to that character, and being that guy, which is kind of awesome. That, which is interesting because the guy who, the other Chris who plays Star-Lord,
Pratt,
he kind of went off the deep end a little bit and kind of went up his own ass a little bit. So,
yeah, people always call him the worst Chris, and I'm like, well, you know.
Well, I think what happened was because it's true though, because fame can go to your head, Like I have met people, I am in a business where I meet occasionally people who were less successful and then become more successful, and some people handle it better than other people. And if you're Chris Pratt and you play the guy in The Office and you're hugely successful and you're kind of a schlub on that show, and then you become a superhero and hot women start throwing themselves at you, you might take advantage of that and be psyched about it. And then your wife might go, that's disappointing. And we're going to have to part ways. But that doesn't mean you should also go off the deep end and become a super entitled other kind of guy.
Because I was under the impression he was all churchy now.
I think he found the church of making money. The Joel Osteen kind of church.
Ooh, that's not good. Well,
where you're just like, Jesus wanted?
Yeah.
He wanted back end. He wanted option. that was not Jesus's main point. So do you want to poke in here and just and see that there's Andy Ashcraft.
Hey, Andy.
We're talking his favorite MCU movies are the second Guardians and Ragnarok, because they're both very family.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Go to the grocery store. This has been a quick cameo by Andy Ashcraft.
Remind him to make sure he gets some eggs.
Don't forget some eggs. Justin would like eggs. No, you might as well get eggs. We could use a dozen eggs. All right.
Yes.
In other news, he has his own podcast called Ethics and Video Games, yes. Which everyone should listen to. This has been a tiny ad for Andy Ashcraft.
Justin, we'll give you an extra 10 minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
That's great. I just wanted to join in the plugging and say I'm enjoying Andy's podcast with, is it Shlomo?
His name is Shlomo Scher. Yeah. He's going to do the next episode, his dorkdom, Sandcastles.
Well, there you go.
Which is weird and awesome thing.
I enjoy the minorly tangentially. They do a big sandcastle exhibit at the Canadian National Exhibition every year, and a frequent subject of sculpture is occasionally people do like pop culture ones. I've seen Star Wars ones. Can't remember if I saw any Marvel ones, but let's assume they did.
Probably. It's everyone wants to build. Do you know that we went to Iceland? We went to Reykjavik, Iceland, and there's a church there that looks like the Thor's castle.
Oh, there you go.
It looks like the in Asgard. It looks like their palace.
A bit Kirby inspired.
A bit, very much so. Very cool.
Yes, and if we are going to mention Kirby, I just want to say that I'm glad that Disney settled with his family. To make sure they got some pay, but I wish kind of it had gone to the Supreme Court so they could have said, oh, no, these contracts are terrible. You need to treat your creators better. That would have been good. I would have liked to see that.
Because then everybody would have got money.
Everyone would have. Then the guy who created Ghost Rider wouldn't be selling, you know, illegal sketches at cons and stuff.
Oh, God. He needs cash.
Yeah. It's like everyone, you like all these people who were working for, you know, Marvel and DC in the 70s and 80s and 90s. These are guys who were, let's just say they could use retirement. And you very rarely hear about a comics artist retiring.
Right. They just keep going until they fall over. And I will say, now I wish to, this is true, there is injustice. In other news, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Ghost Rider arc.
Yes, that was very cool.
The first pandering to those people who did not enjoy the first four seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They were incorrect, by the way.
They were, totally.
I loved Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. from the beginning just because I liked the idea of The Office meets S.H.I.E.L.D. with no powered characters at all. That was kind of cool.
They were, they didn't have superpowers, but they were super spies. You know, they had all the fancy gadgets, and you had Ward, who was a fairly, you know, they introduced him great because like nobody liked him at the beginning. And then it was like, oh, I guess he's like, oh, wait, he's actually evil. He's the super villain.
He's a bad man. He's a bad person who never. You're just like, he has that redemption of, you know, Hitler liked Eva Braun. That's not enough. It's not enough, buddy. I know you like dogs. Still not enough. And it was all gadgets in that first season. And then they're like, oh, people don't like it. So then we have to make somebody Inhumans.
Yeah.
And they brought in the Inhumans and you're psyched. And then, so it's weird that they go Inhumans.
But they don't go the Inhumans. It's like, yeah, these are other Inhumans. They live over here. But, you know, they get a card from Black Bolt every Christmas. but it's obviously mass produced, you know? It's like.
Longtime friend and fan of the show, Steve Mandel, has pointed out what I never even thought about, which was why doesn't Black Bolt have a whiteboard? Why does he have to thought to Medusa and then she's got to repeat everything he says?
Well, I mean, for a while he did some sort of sign language.
Sign language?
And then she would, she would translate. And I assume that every member of like the royal family speaks, you know, Atalan sign language.
I hope so, yeah. Because she could be just be editing whatever.
Yeah.
And you know what he really wanted to order the chicken. And he's just sitting there going, no, I actually did. I've gone vegan. What's happening? All right, I'm having the chicken.
Then he says tofu and the entire world is destroyed. Oh, my God.
Right. Tofu.
Good old.
Yeah, that's a heck of a how does he learn the level of when he whispers what level it does, you know?
Sure, that was outlined in something in the 70s.
Like, I also want Namor. I want Namor with the power of the sun to be in the MCU at some point, and I want him to bring Killmonger back to life.
That would be neat. I've heard about that.
They tossed him into the ocean. They tossed him into the ocean. Namor's got to find him, reanimate him, bring him back.
Well, that depends, you know, if they embalmed him first or not.
I don't think they did. Because he was like, no, just throw me into the ocean. And
I wish we could have seen more of Killmonger, but he had a very good arc. And, in the end, he had good points, but he may have not been going about them in what could be the best ways. And I really enjoyed Black Panther. I just don't feel comfortable discussing it because it's like, not my story to tell.
Right. Well, and the crazy thing is when you look at the story of Black Panther, and because Killmonger is right, you know, Killmonger, there's definitely, I think it was Joelle Johnson who just did an episode. She talked about Black Panther. I did a mini episode with her, a spoiler. Go back in time and look for that, Rangers. And she was talking about how everyone was on board with Killmonger until he killed the guy, Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Was that Forrest Whitaker? I think it was, the actor. They're like, when he killed Forrest Whitaker, we were all like, oh, I see. He's actually evil.
Well, I don't know. When he shot his girlfriend, I was like, that was very necessary, Eric.
That was unnecessary. It was the same with the flag smashers in Falcon and Winter Soldier. You're like, one world, one people. I'm on board.
Yeah. Treat people nice. Sure. Get people medication. Why not? Blow up a bunch of people. Wait.
Right. Right. Get housing for people. The reanimation after the snap, right? After everyone's dusted, the reanimation, the re-undusting was so fascinating in WandaVision.
Oh my God. When they showed that, I was like, what is this? What is that? Oh, this is what is happening. And and the best part, okay, if I can, one of my things I love about WandaVision is that you have to, if you look at things from Wanda's perspective, one day, she and Vision are hanging out in Scotland doing their little runaway. I don't know how often they do it, but apparently occasionally they both leave their team Cap and team Iron Man and go hang out somewhere, spend a nice romantic weekend. That's great. They're doing that. And he's like, let's not do this anymore. Let's go together and make ourselves legitimate as we can be. Maybe he's already bought the house at that time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he probably was going to give her that. And then some aliens attack, he gets stabbed, they fly to Wakanda. They try and take the soul gem out, doesn't work. She has to murder him to try and keep Thanos from destroying the universe. And then he brings him back and kills him anyway. This is the day before for her. And then she gets snapped away. She gets snapped back and walks through a portal where she smacks Thanos very enthusiastically. Everyone knows, she was the one person on the field who was showing him what time it was. And, you know, like literally a week or two later is when WandaVision happens. This is the crap she has been through in one day for her.
Right. Her brothers died in the last year.
Yeah.
Her fella's gone.
Yes.
There's no... Yeah, everybody's dead.
Her
family's gone.
It's like her brother who she grew up with, you know, and it is probably the one person who she could talk about anything with. And now the Vision who she loves and, you know, she had to kill him. That was literally, from her perspective, kill the Vision. He gets brought back. How traumatic is that right there?
So she's gone mad.
Yeah,
She's gone off the deep end, and so she's just recreating this reality.
Yeah.
And what about when Quicksilver from the X-Men shows up.
That was great. That was a piece of cunning production on the part of the creators, because that was, you know, a bait for the fans. That's like, oh, look, it's this guy. And, you know, it's like everyone's like, that's the guy who played Quicksilver in the X-Men. And it's like, yes, well, you know, in your brain it is. In this world, it's Ralph Boner from next door.
Right, right.
And then they played that and it's like, oh, there is nothing not evil about you. And I love that.
Right. There's so many layers to that. And in the blind whispering, there's this thing. What happened was, is when there's closed captioning, right?
Yeah.
For the hearing impaired. And then there is blind whispering for people who are visually impaired.
Right.
Which is called audio description.
The descriptive audio. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the audio description, they say the actor who played Quicksilver in the X-Men movies.
Yes.
So that you didn't lose it. So you're like, oh, so yeah. You've got it. So you could get it even if you were visually impaired, which I love the explaining of the Easter eggs in the audio description. That's all I want. I just want that. I want that forever. And I want a series where we just get to see the undusting of billions of people.
Just show like one or two stories about people popping back in. Cause like in
one shots
in Far From Home, like, you know, it was like, boom, we're all back. Yay. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, you know, Endgame, they didn't even show it. It's like, you know, Hulk snapped his fingers and it's like, are they back? It's like, I think so. Passes out. And then, you know, Sam, the first thing you know that it worked is when Sam whispers in Cap's ear, which blew my mind. That was a great night. I saw that film twice. And yeah, both times that was just so sweet. Just that he came back first. Mm. But yes.
Describe that scene.
Oh, yes.
So that people have not seen it.
If you haven't seen it,
I think those two Avenger movies were so busy for me. They were so intense. It could have been four movies for me. That's what I like about the series.
Yeah. They really decompress stuff. I don't love that in comics, but I can enjoy that in a movie versus. Yeah. In Endgame, you know, the Avengers do the time heist to reassemble the Infinity Stones after Thanos destroys them. He uses the stones to destroy the stones. Smart, but a dick move. So they reassemble them, and you know, the only person who can use them without dying is the Hulk. So, you know, he snaps his fingers to bring everyone back, and then Thanos attacks because he's the king of timing, blows the crap out of the Avengers headquarters. They're all scattered to the winds in this very small location. So, you know, a bunch of them are buried alive. Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor fight Thanos and lose. Quite specifically, he beats the crap out of everyone, although you do get that one glory moment of Cap lifting Mjolnir and smacking the crap out of Thanos with that. That got a cheer. That got a pop from the crowd.
And I have to say that when I saw that was not – you will notice in all the Avengers movies, Sam Wilson never is given the option to try to lift it. And I posit that he could have.
Because definitely.
Nobody is more true to his character throughout the entire series than Sam Wilson. And even though he only has, you know, six or eight scenes over three movies, he's amazing.
I that's definitely true. No one is more noble and worthy, but I don't know if the hammer's racist or not.
I don't think so, because they mix it up because of Heimdall, and there was racist people who lost their shit that Idris Elba played Heimdall.
Oh my
God. And you're like, oh, I'm so sorry. Did something happen in a fictional, it's a Stark mate with a brain on it, you idiot.
There was a Facebook group called Boycott Thor. Because they did not like that Elba was playing Heimdall. And every week I would go into that group and say, oh, hey guys, great job. Thor made this much at the box office this week. And that was my, I tried to go back and it's just like a pure white supremacist thing now. So I'm like,
You guys could fuck yourselves.
Please
do murder suicide, but in the other order.
Bad people.
Yeah. It's such bad people. It's every rocking this country is turned over. Anyway, so but
yes, I think you're definitely right. I think Sam Wilson could get a chance with that.
It would have been great. It would have been so great if he would have been the one too. But I get why they did Captain America, because he's Captain America. Yeah, and he's in my Marvel Puzzle Quest. That's one of the characters you can play is Captain America with the hammer.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, my God.
Yeah, super fun.
Do they have an action figure of Cap holding the hammer?
They probably do, and if they don't, someone has modded that. Someone has modified something to make it so.
Somebody's just taken a hammer and put it in his hand and say, yay.
Oh, finally.
Did you ever read the JLA Avengers crossover?
No, but I heard about it. I forget what that is. Who wrote that?
It was Buziak and Perez.
Buziak, everything he writes, I want to read.
Oh yeah, I adore
and
his.
And Perez, I love, but I can't name everything Perez has done, but I can. I'm on board.
Well, here, name something, and he's probably done it because that guy has had a huge career, right?
Yeah.
So they did a crossover. There was a plan to do it in the '80s, and it blew up because the people in charge of Marvel and DC were schmucks. So the people at Marvel and DC said, let's make a lot of money and produce a book together. And they did. And it was great. But I think the third or fourth issue is a picture of Superman holding Captain America's shield in one hand and Mjolnir in the other.
Because that makes sense. Awesome.
Yes.
Because that is Superman as well. And though, I don't know, did you ever read the Mark Waid Irredeemable and Incorruptible?
I did not. It looks excessive.
It's super dark.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, Irredeemable was not my favorite. Uncorruptible was the Superman story. Irredeemable was the supervillain story set in the superhero story.
Okay.
So, and the way it ends is epic. It is beautiful. Because I also read, is it Astro City?
Yes.
Is that Astro the Buziak?
Yeah.
I've read almost all of those.
Oh, yeah.
And those are always so amazing. Good. Yes.
I often wish that someone, instead of just adapting The Boys again, would just do Astro City. Give us something.
Or Top 10. Did you ever read Top 10?
I didn't. Moore was producing so much at that time, I couldn't keep up with all of them. But Top 10 looked neat.
It is neat. And my favorite, remember Hill Street Blues, the television show?
Oh, yeah.
It sort of felt like that. That was one of the first series I ever read in 2003 when Andy started handing me stacks of comics. And he was like, just try this. Just try. What about this guy? What about that guy? And so Top 10, the sergeant, the one who said, be careful out there in Hill Street Blues.
Oh, yeah.
In Top 10, essentially, that's what I thought that was. It was Hill Street Blues. And the sergeant was a Doberman pitcher.
There you go.
And I was happy as a clam that it was a Doberman pitcher.
Okay. Yes.
We're almost at an hour, which is insane. We're not really, but I do want to talk about
I want to ask one question before we do anything else. All right. So you have seen all of them. You have seen Spider-Man Homecoming.
I have.
All right. Now you recall at the end, we see that Nick Fury is actually Talos undercover for Nick Fury.
Oh, right.
Here's a question I want to ask you. How many times when we've seen Nick Fury, has it actually been Nick Fury, and when has it been Talos?
Oh.
Follow-up question. Is there a real Maria Hill, or is it always Sorin? Because we know there's a real Nick Fury. Because, you know, he's the guy who met Talos in Captain Marvel. Let's assume, in Iron Man and maybe all the Phase 1 stuff, that's Nick Fury. But when did Nick Fury decide he had to go off into space and start doing whatever he's doing in space with the Skrulls? What was that? Was that after Avengers Age of Ultron? Was that, was the Nick Fury in Endgame?
The hairs on my arm just went up. You have literally blown my mind. What do you think?
I think it was after Age of Ultron. I think if it was not always, then we had significant periods where Talos was covering for him, which still also allows us for having a real Maria Hill. Although,
yeah, there has to be a real Maria Hill. I want there to be a real Maria Hill. I love Maria Hill.
Colby Smulders is amazing as that character. I honestly wish that we could see more of her in the role, because she's, she's a very, I first was introduced to her as a performer on How I Met Your Mother. And then she gets these, you know, and she was, you know, she was playing a very funny, but also very rough person because she was Canadian. And so, you know, so then she gets cast as Maria Hill. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. And, you know, Avengers, she's mostly filling out Nick Fury's forms and occasionally shooting at people. But sure. Like, you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier, she is like full on there. She's like beating guys up and, you know, much of the extendable batons, whacking people, all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And yes.
And I wish she, I don't not like Sharon Carter in Falcon Winter Soldier, but I kind of wish Maria Hill was also in there. And I do love that Julia Louis-Dreyfus comes in.
Yes, that is very,
that is awesome.
I'm led to believe that her character is actually supposed to get introduced in Black Widow. I hope that's not a spoiler, but.
Oh no, that's, and I don't care anymore. Yeah. I'm just like, I have told this story several times, and they will not do it because it's the opportunity. The window is sort of closed for it. But Andy had the greatest idea for a one shot. When they stopped making those one shots, it kind of hurt me.
Broke my heart
a little bit. Yeah, because they were so good. And Andy's idea for a one shot was in the. I think it was the. It was not alt. What was the one where they're all at the party, but. Pepper Potts and Jane Foster were not at the party. Yeah, was that Ultron?
That was Age of Ultron.
Okay, so neither one of those were in it. Andy wanted there to be a one shot where they were at dinner.
Yes.
Just having a conversation about some sort of scientific financial cooperation between their two companies.
Funding some research for
Funding
Jane
some
Foster.
Research. And then at the end of it, and they do not mention Thor or Iron Man at all during dinner, and they pull out, and the name of the restaurant is Bechdel's.
There you go. Perfect.
Would have been so great. And they missed an opportunity, but you can't think of everything, and I understand that.
I really enjoyed those. I liked those. They had a funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer. It was a great
one of the
bit.
Great. Yeah, that was a great bit.
The consultant was good. You get to see, you get to see, Coulson and
Coulson.
What's his face? Whose name I can't remember, but the other guy, you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yep.
You know,
it's so good. So now let's take some time here.
Yes.
Is there anything? Because Falcon and Winter Soldier WandaVision was this amazing. So I have a couple of friends who have not been able to watch WandaVision or Falcon and Winter Soldier. They're just like, I don't know that I have enough backstory. I don't know. It's so weird. And they're weird.
They are.
Like, WandaVision is super weird. You have to kind of stick it out, I think, to the third episode.
It's its own weird thing, but it's like, that's what I love is the first two episodes are so short because they are just sitcom episodes.
Yeah. They're just 22 minutes and then you're done. And then they get a little bit longer, and then we get to meet Monica Rambeau, and I'm psyched that.
Yes, the Marvels. So looking forward to that.
Yeah. Oh God. And also the right, because Monica Rambeau will be in the Marvels, right?
And Kamala Khan.
Okay. Yeah. TV show, cartoon. What's happening?
The Marvels is going to be this Captain Marvel sequel.
It's a Captain Marvel sequel.
Yes, and they're going to have
Monica. Isn't there also a Kamala?
Yes, there's going to be a Ms. Marvel series. That's going to be
Ms. Marvel series.
Yeah,
she's
joining the MCU in a Disney Plus series.
Okay, that's it. And yes.
Oh yeah.
But I think that by the time they reintroduce, first of all, that guy from Ant-Man is back.
Yes.
Agent Wu,
with his close-up magic.
Oh, it made so much sense because of Ant-Man that he was good at up-close magic. And then also from Thor, the PA,
yes.
Who obviously went back
Darcy.
And Darcy became a scientist. And I was like, it all kind of brought it together. So, yes, you do have to have backstory.
But do you need the backstory or can you not enjoy it on its own? Because it's just very much.
I think if you just plow through it and you will just like the characters as they are introduced, I think.
Yeah. See, I can't. I have difficulty viewing it from that perspective because, you know, this is so much part of my cultural DNA. Like I said, reading those damn Ohotmu books when I was a kid, you know, and it's like, you know, oh, yes, yes, of course, Captain America could lift so much more than a man of his average workout because of the super soldier serum.
Right. And then when Falcon and Winter Soldier.
I will not kiss a girl until I'm 30, but no.
What's that?
I was making a joke about this.
Okay, movie. Fair enough. I was like, what just happened? Oh, yeah. I was like, did I miss something in the Ohot? So yeah, they made the shield heavier for Sam Wilson because he is not a super soldier.
He is only, he's a really, he's a buff guy. But,
he's just a buff guy.
He's not hold a helicopter strong.
No, he is not hold a helicopter strong with one arm because he doesn't have a bionic arm.
Yes.
And which is why they have him sweating more and why they have him the you know, and he's got to keep the jetpack. He's got to keep the Falcon.
Is that also, do you think, a thing about you know, you got to work twice as hard to be considered half as good?
If they're doing that, that's a terrible message.
Okay.
Because it's not.
It's just the way, you know, it's just how that's frequently African-Americans say that's the way they're perceived. If you want to be considered half as good as a white man, you have to work twice as hard.
Well, yeah, because no one is allowed to be mediocre and the hero of the story, except for white men. But it's the one part of it that I thought, because they dealt with race so well in it, and there was just, you know, I have my own racism is revealed every 3 or 4 months. I am currently reading a children's book because I wanted it to make it through this, right? I was like, dumb it down. Give me the fifth grade version so that I see what I see, but there is an adult version. I will eventually read the adult version. But the kids version that I'm reading right now is, it's called Stamped for Kids. And it is by this gentleman, this Jason Reynolds and Ibran Kendi. So it's called Stamped for Kids. And I have finished reading it. But here's the thing. It's short. It's dumbed down. Like it's for children. It's for fifth graders. It's for 10-year-olds. And there is one called Stamped for Teenagers. I will read that one next. And it just goes through the history of how race, it's about racism, anti-racism, and how all the things have been used, right? So, and all the things I'm talking about are legislation, words, actions, television, movies, and all these things. So in Falcon and Winter Soldier, we get to meet
Isaiah.
Isaiah, yeah, who Kyle Baker wrote and drew that.
Oh, that was so good.
It was so good, and it was called Red, White, and Truth.
Was it Red, White, and Black?
Red, White, and Black, Truth, whatever. And he had 6 of the 7 flimsies, right?
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't think he ever finished it. And I found the 7th one, and I gave it to him for his birthday one year.
That is
and,
nice.
And then for a short amount of time, they printed it collected. And I bought a couple of them when they had them out.
Oh, that's great.
But it's out of print right now. It's terrible because it is available on Comixology, I believe.
That was going to be my next question. Because,
because it is so good.
It was a very good story.
It talks about the super soldier serum and who they tested it on and why, of course, that they would have tested it on soldiers of color that, and then not allowed the one that succeeded to wear the uniform.
Yeah.
I
was going to bring up super soldiers as the next thing, because that was what really tied the Incredible Hulk thing in. But yes, no, Isaiah it was great to see him. Great to get his backstory that they put him into the MCU and that his grandson is there and he will definitely
the Patriot.
Get,
yeah. Yep. Young Avengers. It will happen. And
yes.
Yeah. So it, the way they dealt with, you know, it was, because I know that the blowback on that was from white supremacist fans, right? Mm-hmm. Fans who were like, why do we got to talk about this stuff? Well, we talk about everything, you know, that's the greatest thing about comic books is that they can talk about everything. Exactly. Including drug addiction, including homosexuality, including race, including gender problems, you know, misgendering and sex misogyny itself, you know, that Captain America arc, the Captain Marvel arc, where she gets raped by the alien have the baby. And then she comes back and you're like, what just happened? And she's like, and nobody came and got me? Nobody came.
It was, well, the thing is, you know, I was very young when I read the Avengers annual. That was the follow-up to that. I read that way before I read Avengers 200. And I'm wondering, if I had read Avengers 200 first, you know, would I have been, oh, what a weird, quirky space thing to happen to Captain Marvel. And now her boyfriend's dead. Instead of like, you know, that Jim Shooter story, which was terrible because, you know, once again, unacknowledged rape. Let's not stand. Right. Let's not ignore
kidnapping.
That.
And kidnapping. Yeah, and all of it.
Abduction, rape, forced impregnation, all of it bad. Mind control, all of these things. No, these are not the things you should write off as whimsical romantic storylines. And then Chris Claremont comes in and like basically has her tear the Avengers in half. She like leaves Captain America beaten worse than the Red Skull ever has on the floor. And it's like, why the hell did you guys let him do this? Yeah. And, you know,
it's one of the great things about that I've recently learned, you know, about Chris Claremont is that he has written so many great just nuggets that have been turned into movies, that have been turned into TV shows. The plots of almost all of the stories are Chris Claremont. And
that man's
He should have a giant bag of money.
He does. He has a jet.
Oh, really?
Yes. I got to meet him at a convention once and I did not know who it was. I was, you know, looking through some videos trying to find something for my wife because her birthday is right after this local convention. And I found an episode of The Avengers where Emma Peel is dressed up in the thing, which was a very strong inspiration for the Dark Phoenix. Have we gone over? I am terrified that we have. And I really,
we have.
Okay.
That's all right.
No,
but I was going to give this an extra 10 minutes because I keep talking.
It is a pleasure to speak with you about this subject, which we both care about so much. So I find this, the Hellfire Club episode of the Avengers and I'm looking at it. And then there's Chris Claremont standing right next to me. And I see it's him and I introduce myself like, oh, I should really buy this for you because it inspired so much in that book. He's like, A, I've already got a copy. B, it bought me a jet so I can get my own copy. And I'm like, oh, well, there you go. You know, way to go, Chris. Because I'm assuming he had a good contract when they were adapting the X-Men movies.
Well, then good. I'm glad he was successful from that because everybody, I mean, there's so many different, you know, there's an episode about Batman and that I did. With Scott Rogers, an episode of The Dork Forest, where the guy who created Batman just stole from all of his friends.
Bob Kane.
And that's it. And so I couldn't remember his name. But the thing is, it's good to hear a good story about it. So let's spend the last couple of minutes talking about Loki.
Let's talk about Loki. I'm enjoying it so far.
We're three episodes in.
Yes.
Yes, I am, as has been stated, predisposed to like it. Don't know what the hell is going on.
No.
No.
Where did variant Loki come from and what is her plan? She wants to get to the Timekeepers.
Right. And is she Sylvie? Is she his little friend from before that he shared his powers with? Which is in the comics.
Okay. I was like, I must have missed that episode.
When he was a child.
Yeah.
There was this great where he was growing up and he grew up not on Asgard, not with his mom. He grew up with Sylvie. And Sylvie was, I think, from Hades.
Okay.
And I can't remember all of the things about it. And which
like,
means that,
like the Greek Hades or like Asgardian, like, Niflheim or Hell?
Like the Greek Hades, I believe, and Mephisto, and so
we could do an hour just on Mephisto. Oh my God!
Right, because we don't know, right? I mean, when obviously all of this is leading into the Doctor Strange movie.
Yes,
and the judge in Loki.
Yes,
Ravana?
Yeah, Ben Rensselaer.
Ravana? I thought her name was something like that. She is the girlfriend of Kang.
Okay.
And Kang the Conqueror is a time-traveling supervillain.
Yes.
So,
amusingly enough, the father of the guy who abducted Captain Marvel.
Right. It's leading into all of this stuff, but I think Tom Hiddleston deserves his own show so much that I want it to be like, I don't know what the hell they're doing on that planet in that apocalypse right now.
That was just a neat character minute. Just him and the variant hanging out, you know, going through their own.
Right. It was 45 minutes of building that relationship.
You know what it reminded me of? One of those movies for the 70s where two people would be shackled together who literally hated each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's okay. They're running away from the cops. Yeah, they got off the chain gang.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like they're just trying to get out of town. And, you know, it's like, I did love that last scene. That was when the arc gets destroyed and everyone's like, oh, we're screwed. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And they didn't stop it.
Yeah.
And that's where they ended the show. Yeah, I don't know. Like, are we going to follow these two variants and they're just going to die at the end of this? Because there's only three more episodes.
I heard that they are going to do a second series. I heard they're doing a sequel.
Already to Loki.
They're planning it. It is part of, I'm assuming, phase 5. Season 2 is in development.
Is there a season 2 for Falcon and Winter Soldier and Captain America?
I hadn't heard that yet. But I do. Okay. I believe they're doing a Captain America 4 starring Sam Wilson.
Awesome.
Yes. And War Machine is getting his own series.
Okay.
He's going to be leading the Armor Wars series.
Okay. It's I like War Machine. I wouldn't mind. Because the thing is I didn't know anything about Bucky Barnes before Winter Soldier and Falcon and Winter Soldier. And now I like him.
Yeah.
Now I'm the fact that they fleshed him out. I was like, okay, so I do like the casting on that. And because she is amazing.
Yeah.
That casting woman. You're just like, how the hell did you pick these people? Because they're amazing. Like even Monica Rambeau, you're just like, that's Monica Rambeau. All of a sudden. I don't know if did you think she did the casting for Deadpool? I can't remember.
I honestly don't know. I don't know who the casting director is for the MCU. So
okay, the same woman through the whole thing.
Then she needs to be recognized. I need to know who this woman is so I can send her a Christmas card saying thank you very much for all the hard work you've done.
You've stuck the landing 100 times
every single time.
Paul Rudd, the guy's 55 years old. How is he Ant-Man playing a 35-year-old guy but looks like a 35-year-old guy?
Well, that's, you know, Paul Rudd's nighttime regime must be incredible. The fact that man is not a spokesman for Estee Lauder is a failure on so many levels.
It's true.
I'm assuming he plies it with a trowel every night.
Exactly. Justin Moharib.
Moharib. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Say it fast. Say your name.
Moharib.
Okay. Justin Moharib. My name is Jackie Cation, and we have been talking for over 1 hour. So we could talk forever, and I may do an episode that I was going to do, but then you said MCU. So there's just too many movies, too many TV shows, and too many comic books to not do 1,000 episodes about.
If we just look when Stan Lee started, from the Fantastic Four to now, we're talking decades. You know, the MCU's been on for over 10 years, dozens of movies, hundreds of hours of television. Yes, it's a lot to talk about if you like it. No shame.
And we have, that's what we're ending on. it's at The Bitter Guy, and it's Justin Moharib. And thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I am honored to be a guest.
And I will say the thing that I always say at the end, which is Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?